I'm going deep at the monocule. If it's the only thing I ever do, the car is where I sleep. Think that I might need a 62.
Quick word about our sponsor. As I've said in previous podcasts, just very appreciative of their support. Today is an important coffee day as I drove from Omaha yesterday, got home at 4 a.m. So up at 8 with the kids, and some caffeine is exactly what I need. My wife is a huge fan. I'm a fan. My wife loves coffee and is a Good Walk coffee aficionado now, has found her right kind. Has it every morning at 3:30 as she has at the hospital. So please support them. GoodWalkCoffee.com and use the promo code FIREPIT to get 20% off everything.
Good Walk Coffee is, you know, the moment at sunrise or the first one out on the tee. You're dew sweeping your way through the course and you've got your tumbler clipped to your bag, maybe alone, maybe with friends, but just that enjoyment and that spirit of the game in its most simplest, or just wanting to, you know, take along some of that feeling through your day. If you're sitting in the office and you wish you were on the course, hopefully a cup of Good Walk Coffee brings you back there a little bit.
GoodWalkCoffee.com. Fire Pit is the promo code for 20% off. And thanks again for their support. All right. Welcome back to Any Given Monday. The last time we ended this, I was headed to the bathtub with the kids and a tornado was coming. The siren was going off. And now, a week later, we are back to record the second part. Mark Baldwin, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Good to be back with you. I was a little concerned about you the last time we spoke. It was very sudden and abrupt that you had to escape the incoming tornado. And I'm glad we're back here and doing this.
Yeah, it's always a classic, like the tornado siren. You're like, no, it's, you know, it's not. And then you turn on the TV. It's like, no, really, there is actually a tornado.
So well, it's kind of incredible timing too, because I was literally talking about when you were on the way to get my shirt embroidered with the GoPuff logo.
Yes.
And you received wildfire notifications at that very moment that we were discussing that you received the exact same alert for tornadoes.
Great job on getting GoPuff in one more time. Well done, sir. Hey. Smart businessman. All right. Here's the question I got most between part one and part two. So no holes barred. No joking, just like an honest assessment of my caddying skills. Most people, I mean, like, people are generally interested. I'm obviously self-deprecating when it comes to my caddying skills and also realistic that I'm not a pro caddy. So I didn't even prepare, Mark, that this was the opening question. So, Mark, have at it, buddy. And you can't hurt my feelings, by the way.
Oh, I can't hurt your feelings. I've done it before. I can do it again. I think that I was thinking about all the caddies that I've had this year, and mostly I've just taken local caddies because it just saves a lot of money. But I was comparing all the caddies through the course of the year, and what do I really look for? And watching players in the 25 that were talking about the evolution of their game throughout the year and how much their caddies played a role in that, in identifying really small, subtle things that they themselves weren't able to see. And I think that is one of the most important jobs of the caddies that you see across the course of a span of time. But then there's also the important job of recognizing what your player's mindset is in that moment, what's going through their head. It can be a very difficult job, because for me, when I either get nervous or I'm angry with myself, often I'll just kind of bottle it deep inside and just push it down and just wait for it to explode at some moment later when I'm off the golf course. Very healthy. We don't have any issues to deal with at all, but it's your job to distinguish between those. And I think for me personally, you are an incredible caddy because you pick up on a lot of that emotional stuff. And you know when we needed a reset at various times. whether it was, you know, the double on Friday when I quick hooked it, left in trouble, had to drop, hit a couple of really poor, nervous shots. And then all of a sudden I'm on the cut line. And then you were just like, you're like, hey, dude, we're still fine. You know, let's reset here. Let's just hit a really solid shot and let's get back to doing what we were doing before. Just these really quick, but really meaningful things that other caddies who may be pro caddies, but don't know you that well, don't feel comfortable enough saying, and we said it across the course of the week, you were much more comfortable adding whatever your actual opinion was than you have been in the past. And that didn't always show up early on. Was it the very first round, Thursday? 11 is a layup hole, shouldn't have been on Saturday, but you know, that was a decision that I made kind of against what you had hoped I would make. But like Thursday, we were just getting started, third shot of the day basically, and I hit too much club and you didn't quite feel comfortable really like interjecting. But you did later, the week went on. And I think the more we've worked together, the better you've become. But I really think that for me personally, you're a great caddy, and it's more the emotional stuff. And it's also the stuff where I just like to get away from golf as much as I can in between shots. And you're really good at that. And you know, after two Tom Segura comedy specials, we had a lot to quote.
Yes, we did. I mean, that's good. I appreciate you saying that, because I mean, like, I think I try to do a lot of self-assessment. I mean, I've said on this podcast that this week that we're talking about was so enjoyable that unless Mark gets into another PGA Tour event, I don't think I'm going to caddy again. Obviously, that's easy for me to say now. And, you know, a friend of mine gets into the U.S. Open and says, hey, Ryan, I'm probably going. But, like, it was just such an enjoyable week. But I always try to, like, I'm very honest that, like, angles and going out on a Tuesday practice round of, like, what a pro caddy would look at and, you know, where we'd miss and yardages to shoot and all that kind of stuff, I'm not great at. But my entire job in the restaurant business is, I mean, you just manage people, and you have to understand that Mark Baldwin needs to be pushed sometimes and he needs to be left the hell alone sometimes. And I think that is the franchisee that I work for is like, if you can run a restaurant, you can run a tire shop. It's just managing people. And that's what caddying is like. Mark made, I think, 8 on the final day. I mean, like, we had just made double a few holes previous. We got a bad break on 8. Like, Mark was pissed. And it's my, like, I have to find either shut up, and I did in that case, or just be like, hey, dude, you got to get it back together. It's time to go. So I appreciate it. That's kind of how I look at myself as a caddy, is like, the when to push and when to pull is something I've done my whole professional career, not caddying, not golf related. So I think, but that translates equally over to caddying as much as it does to any other business.
Yes. And that's an important point too, the other things that you've done and other things that you're doing now, where you're telling stories. A lot of the stories that you tell are stories that require someone to open up to you, require someone to share something that maybe they've kept inside. And that, just to be able to hear that story before it's told and then decide how to tell it, requires a pretty high level of emotional intelligence. And I think that translates really well to the right players. If you're a caddy using that to their advantage. And I think you brought that to bear, which was super helpful.
Now, that being said, I think we'll talk about my biggest caddying mistakes as we go on, but let's just kind of do it broad. And I think we'll talk specific events throughout the thing. But on the last pod, we ended with, you made a nervous wedge shot, kind of like, hey, you were nervous. What were your goals going? Did you were you very much like, let's just enjoy the week when you teed off Thursday, Mark? Or did you know you're, when you know you're playing well, and I've said it in the previous ones, is, you know, you said like, hey, the 65 that you shot on Monday was not smoke and mirrors. We, like, it was legit. The practice round was very solid. Like, we were in a good spot. Does that, so when you tee it up Thursday, does that change? Like, hey, I'm at a PGA Tour event. I'm enjoying this. This is great. And then Thursday is like, hey, I'm really playing well. I have a huge opportunity ahead of me.
Yes. And the idea was to remain as consistent as possible for the outlook that we had on Monday, which was, let's enjoy ourselves. I know that I'm going to play well. It's just a matter of, am I going to shoot 64, 65, or am I going to shoot 69, 70? I didn't really have any doubts that I was going to play well. It was just a matter of, you know, just how prepared are you, and how will that reveal itself in the scores?
You know, Mark, like in a week-to-week basis, like if you look at it honestly, whether you have a chance when you tee it up on Thursday, right? Is that a fair assessment? Like, you know where your game. I mean, I use a Graham Dillette tweet a lot, or I think it was a tweet, or I don't know if I talked to him, but he said, like, outside of the top 20 in the world, all of us are going to have maybe 5 or 6 weeks that we know we can contend, and we have to take advantage of those. Like, that's golf. The other times, like, you're going to have to grind to make a cut or play well in top 20 or whatever. Did you know that this week is like, hey, this is 1 week that shit's together, I have an opportunity?
Yes, for sure. To that point, there are very few weeks where Monday, Tuesday, things seem to be clicking. You feel energetic. The shots don't require a lot of effort. And specifically, short game and scrambling feel like they're in place. And this was definitely one of those weeks. But I think about all the strong weeks that I've had in the past 3 years. And most of the time I have a sense maybe 2 to 3 days before that this is going to be a strong week. And most of those weeks, it's a matter of pacing yourself and not getting overly excited for them. Because like this particular week in Omaha, I had that sense. I felt like I was playing well. The problem, I was pretty tired from the week before, and things didn't go as well in the practice rounds. But I knew that at this point in the season, my scoring is going to be at its most, you know, collected place. And that was one of the reasons it was so difficult and challenging, kind of emotionally, to have missed the cut by one, because I felt like it was a course that suited me and I should be playing really well. But yeah, to get back to that earlier point, I definitely had a sense that this was going to be a week where the bounces were going to probably fall the right way, and the shots weren't going to abandon me.
I think this is not about this week, but I think because we got to this week and it was such not terribly unusual in golf, but unusual that you were in the group. Mark was the second to last group on Friday. The cut line had moved back and forth. Were you aware of it, Mark? And were you aware? So to catch everybody up, if you didn't, a guy in Mark's group made birdie on the 18th hole to knock 12 guys out, including Mark. Obviously, you're somewhat aware of the cut line. I mean, you know what it's going to be within one shot, basically everywhere. Did you know that his putt was to knock everybody out?
Yes. There was the possibility that a player in the group behind us could change things, but more than likely what he did was going to account for pretty much the majority of whatever change happened in that cut. And, you know, it had moved back to one under, and I had this like 25 footer for birdie to get to two under, but it was T65. At that moment was one under. So all he had to do is make birdie to move that. And Alex Torella had probably 3.5-4 feet. He'd hit a really good shot. And I had said to him on the tee, hey, let's knock down this flag. Let's have, you know, tap in birdies. Let's move to the weekend. Mm-hmm. but I had planned for both of us to do it together, not for him.
He didn't listen to that part of the plan. Go full
solo mission on that.
It was, yeah. So, you were hinting at either, hey, let's knock down the flags or let's make a solid par.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Together. So after I missed the 25 footer, I considered offering him a sizable sum of money. And we actually talked about that in scoring. I was like, hey, what was the number out there for you to miss that? Because I considered I considered offering you a pretty sizable chunk. He would have gotten
if the tour's listening, Mark is joking.
I'm not at all. But he would have gotten a really nice bottle of wine. Way nicer than anything I've ever drank.
Yes. All right, so back to the week. Let's just talk about a few moments. We talked about it briefly, but 11, the first day. And I think, and I put it in the blog, is those, I think there's moments in a round that if you're not inside the ropes, and again, I'm not trying to pretend like I've been inside the ropes a ton, but obviously I know more than most golf fans do. Like, to me, 11 on the first day is an important hole to just kind of get you settled. Like, you hit a nervy wedge. We didn't hit the right club off the tee, but it ended up okay. Like, does that settle you in, Mark? Like, it settled me in, but like, you know, for those that don't know, we don't have a conversation like, hey, are you settled in? Like, but you can sense whether it settled it in. Did it settle? Like, did it kind of get you like, okay, I can do this at just another golf tournament?
Yes, because that was such a feel shot. It was a 70, maybe 75 yard wedge or so to the pin. And it was a very small area where the flag was. There's a deep bunker left and water right. There wasn't much margin for error going at that flag. And the other thing was, and this is gets back to your question of the experience of having you as a caddy that is unique to you. I knew that there was the strong likelihood the Golf Channel at that time would be covering these shots. We had heard from a Golf Channel producer that there was a possibility they were going to put, you know, at least a shot or two on TV. And, you know, I haven't hit many shots on TV and the cameras are right there and it's the third shot of the day. And that definitely entered my mind. So to be able to dial back kind of a shot that required a little more precision, you know, and something I couldn't hit hard. It was just on all of a, really a feel shot with feeling like the camera was on me and, you know, it was only the third shot of the day on the PGA Tour and, you know, third full shot of the day. I think that added a little bit of pressure. And when I kind of nipped that really well, it relieved a lot of it.
Then Mark started to play well, just like, I don't think we made another bogey. I can't remember the exact round, but like you started to make birdies. Are you able to block out that you're at a PGA Tour event once you're in a flow like that, Mark? I mean, is it impossible or is it in the back of your mind or is it always on the forefront of your mind that like, I mean, not that it's, you walk down the fairway, it's still it's an opposite field event, but it's very different. Like the setup is like, you know, you're at a PGA Tour event. So are you able, when you're playing well like that, kind of block out what's going on? Or is it always just part of where you're at?
Yeah, I think that there are moments where you're brought back to reality that this is a PGA Tour event and the signs are bigger. And like I said, when in our last discussion, the clothes are nicer and the courses are more pristine and all of that stuff. And there's just more interest and attention and applause, but we get in such a steady flow and a steady rhythm. And especially the timing of the group, we weren't waiting a lot. I think we moved along at a pace where it was a little easier to block that out. We didn't have to sit around and wait in places where there were very difficult shots and there were a bunch of people around, you know, in a murmur through the crowd. So we did get a nice rhythm and were able to put all that aside.
So Thursday we ended with 8 points, I think. And we're like T10 when we walk off. And I think we ended up like T21 or something like that after the first round. Like it, you know, I put this up when I talk about the cut line. I know you're playing well, Mark, but there has to be, or I'm asking, I guess, is the cut, because it's such a financial huge, huge part of, I mean, you make the cut, you're going to make $8,000, which is, you know, a top, whatever, 12 or 10 and whatever it is in, on the Korn Ferry Tour. It's impossible, correct, to just not think about like, hey, I want to play well tomorrow, but I also want to make the cut, right?
Yeah, for sure. It is difficult to put all that other stuff aside, the larger questions and everything, but when a golfer is playing well, most of that stuff fades away and it does become at some point just golf. When I was thinking back about talking about rhythm, we did get behind a bit on Sunday. And as mentioned in the last conversation we had, we're on the clock. But we didn't have any of those issues for the first few days. The pacing was just very consistent. But I think when you start to imagine all of the external factors, it changes. It can change your routine. It can change the internal feeling that you bring to every shot. But that is reflected in how long, at least for me, it takes me to hit a shot. And I think in that time where we were right before we got on the clock, I had hit my first shot of the week that was a little loose, not really of the week, but like certainly the day and the last couple of days that was loose enough to have lost a ball. And then all of a sudden, all of that stuff just surrounded me. And time seemed to move really, really fast. Like I couldn't keep up. Mm. And it's a perception that you only feel when all those external factors come to the forefront of your concerns. Mm-hmm. It's no longer just golf. It's something that's more important than that. And so to leave that stuff by the wayside, which we did in the first, you know, most of the first 3 days, and just stuck to the routine. That's what it sounds cliche, but that's how so many golfers get out of that, is they just get back to basics of the routine.
I think 11, Mark, looking back and just in this conversation, I guess I've realized it, 11 like kind of played, was an important hole for us many times. A, because probably the big, not a disagreement, discussion we had about a play on Saturday, but Friday we're going along relatively fine. I think we're at 14 points when we get to 10, and Mark hit the worst shot of the week, just like a duck hook into the shit on 10. And like, there's, you know, people who have never been in it. And again, I've said it a million times, I'm going to stop saying it, but like, not that I've been in it a million times, but I know enough about golf. Like the cut weighs on you. Mark and I never say the word cut, but there's big ass scoreboards that show the cut. We made double. We're at 11 points and I never even thought about the cut prior to that. Of course I thought about it, but it wasn't really part of anything we were doing. And now all of a sudden we've made a double and there you are. I mean, you're sitting on the cut. And like I said it in the blogs to the people listening, is Mark never says the word cut. I don't say the word cut. We know where the cut is. We all know. There, especially on the PGA Tour, there is big ass, very nice scoreboards, and it's right in the right corner. And we can all pretend that we don't look at it. We all look at it. Every player out there looks at it. It's impossible to avoid. So I assume you're feeling the same thing, right, Mark?
Yes, and the other thing about the cut number was, I think after the first day, it was maybe three points, yeah. Mm-hmm. Was the cut, and we just had a much nicer day on Friday, and that cut line kept on moving towards me. You know, I was well inside of it, but it went from, you know, typically you can think, okay, if it's a fairly similar day to the day previous, you can kind of double whatever number that is, and that's probably going to be more or less the cut. So 3 points, 6 points, maybe 7 points. But then it got to 8 points, and then it got to 9 points was the projected cut. So then you have to assume it's still really nice out here. There's still plenty of players on the course. It's probably going to go to 10 points. You know, does it go to 11 points? Who knows? And so those are questions that are in your mind. I didn't fortunately entertain them too deeply, because right after I made that score, a double on 10, bounce back with birdies on 11 and 12. And the really, the nail in the coffin on the cut was the shot on 15, which was a 225-yard par three that played straight into the wind. And we couldn't even see it land because it was so hazy. There was so much ash in the air. So we didn't see it down. We just knew that I had hit a really solid shot. And we got up there and it was 3 feet away. And that was just a massive relief to know there's pretty much no mathematical way that you could mess up these last three holes and have to worry about missing.
And I mean, I think 15, I can't think of it. That's probably the most difficult hole on the course. I mean, especially I was playing into the wind.
Most difficult par three.
Yeah. But let's go back to 11 for a minute. So 11 is and we'll talk about why it's reachable, but most days it's a layup and it's water all the way around the green. Basically, if you, Joseph Bramlett, we played with on Sunday, if you miss the green by 1 yard short, it all comes back into the water. So, and the pin was tucked in the back right corner. And I think 11 was just an important hole for that moment, Mark, because again, it is, in the pro world, relatively easy shot. That being said, the ramifications of hitting it a little chunky are we're going to make five, maybe six, and then we're out. You know, like then we got to really make hay to make the cut. And you hit it to like 6 feet and made birdie. That had to be the same kind of feeling that it was on Thursday, Mark. Like, hey, I still got this. We're fine.
Yeah, I think it was just a very brief moment where there was some uncertainty. And then I saw that shot on 11 very clearly. And yeah, it was 125-yard shot or something to a really tucked pin. There was no margin for error. It literally 5 feet, maybe 6 feet right, there was a possibility that it goes in the water. I just saw this like this beautiful, shallow strike cut that we just had a really nice visual and basically hit the exact shot. And that kind of brought me back into the rhythm of, hey, okay, we're just playing golf again. It's not more important than it needs to be.
What's your feelings walking up 18, Mark, on Friday? I mean, we'll talk about Sunday, but is it are you proud, relief, none of that? Just like, hey, we still have, you know, two more days to go. I mean, it's your first PGA Tour cut in your career. It's been a long career. So what is there any feelings?
Did you just say I'm old?
I believe so.
Okay.
Is there any emotions outside of like the normal golf emotions in this scenario because it was your first PGA Tour cut?
Yeah, I certainly think that on the 36th hole, I was just more concerned about trying to make a score that I was proud of on the last hole. And we didn't talk about this, but the first day, I'd hit a really nice tee shot. This was the ninth hole. We started in the back and I had a pretty simple sand wedge, it was 125 yards, 130 yards, but it was blowing pretty decently downwind. And I completely laid the sod over this wedge. Basically, I stood over it. The wind died when I had taken the club away and I didn't back off. I went at it harder and just stuck the club in the ground. And I mean, I hit this thing 90 yards probably.
Yeah, that's probably true. That was a really nice up and down too.
And then it was a very difficult up and down. Yeah. And I did not want to end that day with a bogey. And so I chipped it to like, I don't know, 12 feet, but it was 12 feet past the hole. It was a downhill left to righter with probably a foot of break. It was a very difficult putt. And to get that one in the hole, I was so proud of the way I finished that off have made that putt. And it went right in the heart. It felt like, you know, I'm sure it didn't look like it, but I walked it in. I felt like I was, you know, Kevin Na or something. And then that 36th hole, I wanted to close in a similar way. And so when I didn't and I made bogey, I was disappointed. And then it took a little bit. We walked off the green and you could sense, not that I was upset, but just slightly momentarily disappointed. And you were just like, dude, it's been Think about your whole career. 15 years it's taken you to this point, and you just made your first cut on the PGA Tour. And then it was just like an immediate, you know, transition out of that thinking. And I went into the club, into the locker room, and I sat there and I looked around at the names in the lockers around me, and the coverage of the tournament was on TV there in the locker room. And I was just like, you know, this is amazing. This is what I grew up thinking about. This is what I grew up dreaming about.
Let's talk. We're going to jump to Sunday just because I think it's an important moment, what you just talked about. Do you allow yourself to think, Mark, like, hey, I might never get back here, whether that was Sunday or Friday or whatever day, that, hey, I may never get back here, but I'll always be able to tell Miles, or if you have more kids, that, hey, I made a cut at a PGA Tour. I played with the best in the world and made a cut. Do you think that far ahead, or do you try to block it out in the, like, from a mental standpoint of like, hey, I'm still grinding. I know I'm going to be out here, what every mini tour pro thinks, regardless of where their career is at.
That's more on the, I wouldn't say the forefront, but it's present in the thought process. I know that that possibly is my last walk in the sun, you know, essentially on the PGA Tour. But I don't let myself think about that too much. I know that's a possibility. And if it is, like I said, when we finished, everything that's taken me to this point was worthwhile. And I mean, I'm so privileged to have had this opportunity, you know, so amazingly lucky, because, you know, I think a few months ago, I was just in a very different place mentally. And I didn't know if this was my last season, how would it end? I don't think this is certainly the end of my golf career in any way. But if it is, that is a pretty nice way to close out what's been a very interesting and enlightening journey.
And again, this is not a question I thought I'd ask, but let's look at it now. Does David Skins getting his card, does that type of story drive you to say like, hey, I'm better than David Skins, or I'm as good as David Skins, or I can be David Skins, whatever that scenario is? Do stories like David's hit the radar, Mark, that like, hey, if he can do it at 39, this is another reason I got to keep grinding?
Yeah, absolutely. And those, you know, David Skins and Jared Wolf, I think especially Jared a couple of years ago was in kind of a similar place to where I am right now. Jared's obviously a little bit younger than me, but we're in that same range. And yeah, I those guys are anomalies. For every Jared Wolf, for every David Skins, there's probably, you know, 50 other players like them that end up going and selling insurance or whatever. But having played with those guys a bunch, that's certainly a hopeful thing to aim at.
All right, we're trying to keep this to an hour, so let's fast forward. Do you allow yourself to think, do you try to block out like top 10 and what that would mean to your career on Friday afternoon or Saturday morning? Or are you very much like, hey, this is a huge opportunity, like either face it or try to block it out? What was kind of your thoughts going into the Saturday?
Yeah, it was one of those things that's, it's present in your mind, but it's not something I allowed myself to think too deeply about. And then getting back to, you know, having you as my caddy and how that differs from other people, there was just this massive groundswell of support and so much talk about that on Twitter, you know, about top tens, about sponsor exemptions, especially Sunday morning. All of a sudden, the entire Twitterverse rallied around getting a sponsor invite for us to the Wyndham. And so that's when I entertained those things a little more, but it was more of in a fun way, less in a, let's put more pressure on you than you need to be adding.
Saturday is the, like the two most caddy things. One, my lack of caddy skills, and two, the like deepest discussion or disagreement. We didn't have a disagreement. It was a discussion. So Mark makes birdie on six, which is a pretty easy par, relatively easy par five, and heads to seven. He's up on the tee first. Mark does his own yardages. I do my own yardages, and we say, yeah, that's the number. Mark gets up on the tee first. I don't remember if I was putting in the pin, but for whatever reason, I was a few steps behind you. And you already figured out the yardage and it pulled the club. Like it was a hole that we kind of knew what was going. It was pretty relatively straightforward. It's usually between two clubs. So Mark set a yardage. I just said, yeah, I didn't even confirm it. And as soon as the ball left the club, I knew it was gone. Everybody knew it was gone.
Here I was thinking, yeah, was the confirmation.
Yeah. And, like, have you made a mistake? Like, it's just rushing, right, Mark? I mean, like, you kind of get in like, hey, I got a birdie. I got to, like, eight is a reachable par four. Like, we had some scoreable holes coming up. So you kind of – is it like you just kind of get in the fold and you just made a mental mistake? And obviously I didn't confirm it's on me also, so.
Yeah, it was just – I was first on the tee. I had some mojo going, and I probably just was a half a step ahead of where I needed to be. Mm. Just needed to take, you know, that extra, like I was feeling it. Right. And so that kind of stuff sometimes can really work to your advantage, especially hitting full shots, you know, on drivers. It's like amazing, right? It's a certain putts. It's amazing to be that locked in, but on a hole with water short and no margin for error long and a big slope that you're trying to use to work the ball to the hole, that just required like a half a step back and one more breath and let's just be sure about this. So it was the energy and the emotion that I took into that hole, and it was the wrong hole to take that energy and emotion, and it cost me at least 1 point.
Yeah.
At least.
And that's where a veteran caddy would have. And again, I know enough to just say, hey, I don't have my number yet. So it's a good learning lesson for me. I'm unfortunately, obviously costly. All right, let's fast forward to 11. So this is probably the biggest discussion. Mark and I, and to be fair, this discussion had happened from Tuesday all the way to this point on Saturday. We had talked about whether Mark's very long, and this hole was the only pin that we could go at was wind in our face and the pin tucked against the water because this chipping area over the green, you could chip back at the hole. So on 10, I had looked at the pin, the wind was correct for us. And we were kind of, this is where Stableford is a little bit different. Like we're probably always going to make five if we hit it in the water. It's a relatively short chip. You fly the ball over land, so you would drop it back at like 70 to 100 yards. You're almost always going to make five. And, you know, eagles are so valuable. I thought it was a place to step on the gas. So I got on the tee and I said, hey, Mark, let's think about driver here. He said, let's hit six iron. I said, I like six iron, but let's think about driver for a minute here. And we just didn't, and Mark pulled six iron and hit it in the rough to add on to the top of it. Should I have done something differently, Mark? Would you expect a professional caddy? Cause looking back is the right play, right? Should I have pushed harder for it to say like, hey, let's think about it some more?
No, I don't necessarily think that's the case. You said, let's think about driver here. I think that was probably the moment that you were the most adamant about offering an alternative. And you did lobby. I definitely knew that you thought driver was the right play. Just to really briefly, because we haven't really talked about the final day, but we had talked to Scott Fawcett and talked specifically about this hole more than anything. and we had looked at previous years, or really just last year, because it was the first time they played, there were only two eagles across the entire tournament at that, on that hole. And so Scott was dead set on the idea that this was a layup hole and you take your chances with the wedge. You're not going to make a bogey. You're probably going to have a decent birdie look every day. And so I think I just took that to heart and didn't adapt. And that moment needed a little more improvisation, but that was, I think what would have turned me there, if you had been like, dude, it's Saturday, we are on a free roll. Mm-hmm. We have nothing to lose. The what we're playing for here is top 10. You can make an eagle here, but you got to hit driver. Especially, mm-hmm. I'd just come off a birdie too. And yeah. I think you could have talked me into it. Mm-hmm. It was just one of those things that, you know, maybe a little more lobbying would have helped, but at the same time, it's easy to say in hindsight after you make a bogey, oh, I should have done this differently.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I hit that in the fairway. Let's say I hit a good wedge shot, make a birdie. We never even talk
about
it.
You never even think about it. Right. Yeah.
You know.
All right. We got about 20 minutes. So Sunday, I mean, we birdied the first two holes. I felt it. Like, we knew we needed a really good one. You know, we were well out of it, but like we put up 15 points, we at least have a fighting chance. I think looking back, we probably needed about 20. So, well, obviously in the middle of the round, when you're early, you have no idea what that number is for the top 10. And we were on Sunday, a true, true free roll, because mm-hmm. really there's this, I mean, you're going to make $7,000. Obviously money is important to Mark, but like, it wasn't like we were on basically a free roll. Made two birdies and then really got unlucky. So Mark hit it left on five. And I mean, it wasn't that far off line, maybe 10 yards, 5 yards off of the rough line. There was a spotter right there. I didn't really, honestly, when the ball took off, I didn't even really think about it being lost. I mean, it just wasn't even part of my, I mean, we would have hit, had we even thought for a second it was a chance it would have been lost, we would have hit a provisional. We didn't. We got up there, and the spotter said it hit the base of a tree right by him, and he didn't know where it went. After we thought about it, and Joseph Bramlett, who we were playing with, hit hybrid, marks very long, as we've talked about many times, and the tree we're looking at the base of it, was basically in line with Joseph's hybrid. So in hindsight, we think maybe the spotter had the wrong tree. But obviously momentum, just like we lose the ball, and that, I mean, kind of just killed everything, Mark. Right. I mean, at least we gained it back obviously with the eagle a little bit, but obviously, you know, the top 10 is, outside of going on an insane run, is kind of out of the question.
Right. And just to take a step back, that Sunday morning, there's this amazing, overwhelming response on Twitter where, like, I've never seen golf Twitter so positive and so supportive.
So
we talked about how, you know, just social media in general has a way of fracturing opinions, and there was no fracturing of it. I just kept waiting for like the play better crowd or, you know, some trolls to come up and just really rain on our parade, but everybody was so supportive. And it was really amazing to be at the center of it. It was really amazing to feel like, for just for a minute, like the golf world just revolved around you. And it, you know, that's total illusion. And I obviously know that's still not the case, but that's the way it felt. And it was, it's such an addictive feeling. It's probably the way you feel all the time because you're such a influencer, which is how I come to be in this situation.
I've never felt people more. People are amazingly supportive to me, 100%. I've never felt more people were engaged in something as much as that week. It's not close to me. I mean, you know, you and I talked about it. We read messages like a guy got up in Scotland and was like refreshing the Barracuda board. You know, there was people like, I've never watched the Barracuda. I've never knew who Mark Baldwin was. I mean, just endless messages like that. I've never felt more people locked in. And I think the tournament's response to the people's response was the confirmation that, like, hey, this is like, I mean, there was a genuine, like, people were, a lot of people were genuinely engaged in your week. I mean, our week in some respects, but obviously you're playing. Like, I mean, I've in the 3 years that I've done this account, I've never felt a more sustained, like, people engaged. I honestly thought, like, my sixth blog, I'm like, okay, it's gonna, like, people are gonna stop reading. And, like, six was the most read. I mean, hell, I put up all six blogs the Monday, and 4,000 or 5,000 people read them on that day. It's like people were genuinely and very sincerely engaged in your success.
Yeah, and it was just such an amazing feeling. You know, I probably spent a little bit too much time on social media that Sunday morning, but it was fun, and it actually got me even more excited to play. Just the push of, let's get this guy into Wyndham. You know, that somebody had sent out this tweet, and it was like, if Wyndham doesn't offer Mark the sponsor invite, I'm boycotting everything Wyndham, including Wyndham Clark. That's a brilliant tweet. But it really felt amazing. And I think that's one of the things that I'll take with me forever, is just the support of all the people. I mean, it felt like, you know, that moment in Gladiator where Proximo says to Maximus, he's like, you win the crowd and you win your freedom. Mm-hmm. And that was what kept coming up. It was like, man, we won the crowd.
Yeah. I mean, people were yelling for us. I mean, like, Mark and I were like, I think this is the most supportive Monday qualifiers ever had. Like, people were yelling to me and to Mark. Like, it was very, very surreal and beyond appreciative. We got about 12 minutes, Mark. I want to get to 18, and then I want to get your thoughts about it. So I want to get quickly to this is going to take just a second, but there was like maybe 10 or 15 people following us. Obviously, eagles are essential. This par 5, you cannot hit it right because there's big giant trees. Every day we hit it right. And on the last day, Mark's like, I'm going to try to cut an 8-iron around these trees. I mean, like, probably a play you don't even try in stroke play, maybe on the last day at, like, after you Monday qualify, but you probably would have like hit a 9 or wedge to the front of the green and took your chances that you were going to chip and putt for birdie. But Stableford eagles mean a ton, and we were just firing it. You slice a 8-iron around the trees, and we hear no applause. I mean, zero, not a nothing. And we were like, oh, I thought that was a really good shot. And so Mark and I assumed we were over the green, and we get up there, and it's like, I don't know, 12 feet away.
Yeah.
It's like one of the best shots you hit all week.
Definitely. Yeah. That was surprising. The crowd let us down a little bit.
Yeah.
In that moment.
And so Mark makes it to make eagle, but like we're out of it, played well coming in. So Mark hits his drive in 18, and I just said, thank you. I mean, listen, I love caddying at a Monday qualifier. And it's easy for me to enjoy caddying because I know the next week I don't have to go caddy. So I've picked and choose where I've caddied, but like, I genuinely enjoyed every moment of it. And I just said to Mark, like, hey, thank you, man. Thank you for taking me along. And I, you know, this is probably, assuming you don't want to use me at a PGA Tour event, this is probably the last time I caddy, because I just don't think it can get any more perfect than this. Like, obviously we'd like to have a top 10 or a win or something crazy, but like, we generally enjoyed the week from Monday afternoon until Sunday night.
Yeah, and for it to have happened with you on the bag, the goat of Monday cues, and to get through the Monday, you know, and to be a part of that, to be your first PGA Tour event, and you didn't get there because some big name player was, you know, asked you to come on the bag. It was because some random player who is a friend of yours showed up to the Monday, and we went in with very low, you know, minimal expectation, and we came out with my first PGA Tour cut and your first PGA Tour experience.
I think that's another important, I mean, A, because we've become good friends, Mark, but also because like your career is exactly what this count is about, is about enjoying that walk up 18 to finish T32 or whatever, knowing that, hey, you might not get back here. You want to, you have the ability to, but you've been in the game long enough to know that you're like, hey, I would love to caddy for Corey Connors, but it meant more to me to like, hey, this is exactly, obviously it, taking the friendship part out of it, which is a huge part of it. Just that like, hey, this is what this account is about, is that Mark's going to go make $18,000 or $19,000. It's somewhat meaningless in the golf world, and Mark enjoyed every second of it. Honest, the best golf experience I've ever had in my life. And obviously I've not won anything. I've like won small college tournaments and local tournaments, but like I honestly genuinely enjoyed every second of it. I don't remember, obviously Mark hits it in the shit on 10. It's not a great time, but like, hey, the grind is fun. Like looking back and after you make the cut, after you make that double and like get it back on 11. I mean, that's fun. It's as fun as and enjoyable as it can be.
Yeah, exactly. And when we say this is as fun as it can be, it's in part because of the competition. Of course, you know, if you and I and we grabbed a couple of our friends and we went out, we could have a great time playing golf tomorrow. We could have a lot of laughs. Maybe, you know, maybe one of us shoots our personal best score. But to have as much on the line, to have such a big stage to do it, you know, to have done it in a way where you started your account to help, to be a player advocate, to help players chase their dreams. And you were there at that moment when my dream that I've had since I was a kid imagining myself when I was on the putting green at Laconia Country Club in small town, New Hampshire, imagining myself with an important putt on the 72nd hole of the PGA Tour event. You were there when that actual dream was realized.
And it's been a dream of mine, Mark. Like, obviously I realized very early that my playing career was not going to include any tour, let alone the PGA Tour. And then once I caddied, and again, I've never had a desire to be a full-time caddy. That life is not for anyone. I mean, when you get to the top, Joe LaCava's living all right, but Corn Ferry caddies live a life that I have no desire to, respect to them, but I just don't. Yeah, it was a dream. I mean, like, Mark and I were walking up the hole, realizing kind of our own dreams, and like, it just was very surreal. And if Mark never plays a PGA Tour event, or he gets on tour and has a 5 to 10 year career out there, there will never be the feeling of that 18th hole. Like, when you get your card, it's very much down to business and like, hey, I got to go keep my card. There are not a lot of fun times, enjoyable, let's go enjoy it. It's like, oh shit, I got to make a cut and get in the top 125. There's never going to be an experience like that for Mark again, I assume, Mark, right? I mean, like, if you get your PGA Tour card in 2 seasons, it's like not teed up at the Safeway and enjoy it. It's teed up at the Safeway knowing I got to get in the reshuffle and
right.
I finished 23rd and my card's not that great and I got to play well because I got to get more events down the road.
Yeah, I don't know that I'll ever have the exact experience again of just being able to absorb everything that's happening to the degree that we did. And like I said, standing over that putt on the last hole after we had walked up, it was just like, it was such an idyllic, beautiful hole. The weather was at its, you know, most perfect moment. There were more fans around than we'd seen all week. It was just a packed house there on the 72nd green. You know, we had just walked up. I'd hit a really nice drive. Joe had scrambled a little bit. And then I hit the shot up to, you know, maybe just outside 20 feet. Had a good spot, uphill look at it. And I'm reading this putt. And in my mind, I just wanted to take a moment and just, you know, kind of take it all in and feel it. And I thought about the late evenings that I had growing up in small town New Hampshire, practicing putting, thinking about this very moment, and just it clicked, and it was just this like poignant, beautiful feeling. And the only thing on my mind was seeing that ball go in the hole. It was just this incredible moment of Zen. And then it actually happened. I mean, literally just like willed it into existence, but it wasn't just that moment of willing. It was everything from when I was, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, all the way to this point. And it was truly just a dream come true.
Yeah. You know, a lot of moments from the week that I will remember, you know, after Mark signed his card and Mark, we had given away everything, literally everything on the 18th hole. I gave away tees, balls. Mark and I both gave away our hats to kids. After all that, we were walking up the ramp, or up the walkway to the car. And I just said, "Hey man, 15 years is really cool. And I really appreciate it." And we just had, you know, a pretty cool conversation, and it'll just be a memory for me forever. And thank you. You're a great friend. And I was lucky enough to be on the bag, and it was a very, very cool moment. And I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for helping to make my dream come true. And, just being a part of that, it couldn't have happened in any more perfect way. And when I say this, I mean it, that there's nobody that I wanted walking up that 72nd hole with me more than I wanted you there.
I appreciate it, Mark. It's it was awesome. And I told Mark we had too many serious moments on the 72nd hole, and I said I'm only caddying at the Masters from now on. And so that's the next loop.
I'm a little bit surprised that Joel, after the time that you guys spent together in the Pro-Am, wouldn't ask you to tag in when Gino takes a little break.
Yeah, maybe. Mark Baldwin, thank you. Awesome, dude. I appreciate it. I have to jump on ESPN Radio. I'm big timing Mark at the end of a great podcast. And thanks, Mark. You're the best, man.
Thanks, man. Great time.
Thanks again to Good Walk Coffee for supporting me. I just can't thank them enough. Go to goodwalkcoffee.com and use the promo code FIREPIT for 20% off your complete order.